Hello everyone and welcome to Toonami Therapy on November 19th of 2020. I am Michael.
I'm Tommy.
And we're here as always to talk a little bit about some of the animes we've been watching and some non-anime stuff we've been watching. Actually, we're going, we've decided that we are going to try the, we're actually going to deviating even further from what the podcast was initially supposed to be about, started watching through Star Trek The Next Generation. So we're going to start at the beginning. We're going to keep going until we get to the end or we lose interest. Although, since we're starting with season one, maybe we'll be losing interest pretty quick.
Yeah, we're kind of like MTV. Yeah. We're like the MTV of podcasts, you know. Start out with music videos, and then you change a little bit, the more music stuff, and then soon enough, you're just like a reality TV channel.
Well, at least we've still got the Toonami stuff. It's just it's not really necessarily so much a replacement as an expansion. Yeah, we didn't really quite finish with Tales of the Abyss. We kind of had to cut off abruptly. So we'll have a little more to say about that when we get to it. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about. I mean, there is not any time for wasting time. You know what I mean? Do you understand that?
Yep.
Okay, I'm not sure, because I think it's very important we notice that we shall not waste time at all. And in fact, it is so important that we not waste time, I am not even going to continue with this joke in which I talk about how we shouldn't be wasting time, and in doing so, wasting time. So, We begin with Sword Art Online, episode 87. So, basically, the situation is still going on with them fighting all the people who are... Because remember, they think this whole thing is just some game, which is why all those actual real-world people have popped in to go and try to kill stuff, because they think, oh, it's just a game, so our heroes are trying to stop them. And so something to notice. So all those players, like the bad guys, they're all like just in... They're basically mooks. They're just all wearing the same, like, kind of generic outfit. And I don't know, but if I was, like, if someone was telling me, hey, you can go and do all this stuff, I'd be like, but, like, I just look exactly the same as everyone else. Who designed this game? Aren't there any customizable features?
I noticed that they kept on, they continued the thing about the real world. Mm-hmm. Saying that phrase in this episode, which, like, if someone came up to me and said, oh, I'm from the real world, wouldn't that kind of, like, make you think, maybe I'm just a computer simulation, you know?
Yeah, that was always such a weird, it's just such a weird thing, because all they have to do is say, like, my world, I'm from another world, simple enough, and it doesn't, I mean, it's still obviously a bit of a weird thing to, accept, but it wouldn't, at least, like, everyone would be saying, like, real world? Well, you're saying my world is imaginary? What, you think your world is better than mine?
Yeah.
That's... worldist, man. Or universist, realityist. There's a prejudice in there somewhere.
Yeah.
Most of the episode, though, is what's his name? The guy. Characters who I'm sure I would know more about if I had paid more attention in earlier episodes are fighting. And one of the good guy manages to beat the bad guy, but gets killed himself. And then he goes and then he dies and then goes to the digital afterlife. Or it was kind of unclear. Was it established there was some kind of afterlife for these people in it or what happens?
Yeah, that was really weird. It was like, he's passing on, but where is he passing on to? I mean,
are we like
from the same place all the dead Marios go?
Well, I mean, one person I saw like said, well, it's because they're AIs, but they're all self-aware, so they do have souls, so they just go to wherever anyone else does. Living people, even if the data is erased, I'm like, well, that seems interesting, but I don't know if that. But okay, maybe this stuff was explained before, so I don't want to like go at it when, you know, I was the one who didn't watch a bunch of the episodes and was only kind of paying attention to the ones I did watch. So I have to give it the benefit of the doubt here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. This episode, which is kind of weird because I kind of watch everything in the reverse order that we're talking about it tonight. So this is the most recent thing I watched, and there just wasn't much to it. I've never understood the thing about those friends of Asana. Like, I thought the names that she calls them were just avatar names from the original, whatever name of that game was called. Or was it called Sword Art Online? Or am I saying Alfheim Online? I forget which one it is. But I thought those were just screen names. So why doesn't she call them by their real names, you know? I mean, I know Asana, that's her real name. So she just uses her real name kind of like I do. But I don't know. That confuses me. Like, do they just go by the same fake names that they were in the other game, even though they're not really the same character? I don't know.
Yeah, that was that's a good point, actually. I don't know. The thing is, I'm just thinking about it. I'm like, I don't know because I have played some online multiplayer game, but never with people that I knew in real life. So you would always just refer to each other by their in-game names. So there was never like any other ones. But yeah, that's an interesting thing. Since I don't have experience, do people usually refer themselves by their names or their avatar names in this?
Well, I know from watching YouTube, not YouTube, Twitch streaming, people usually refer to each other as their real names, not their fake names. And that's kind of like why I'm confused here, you know? Like, if I knew someone in real life and they're in a game with me, I'd probably just call them by their real name, you know? But I don't even know what their real names are, actually. I know those aren't their real names, but I can't remember what their real names are. So
I actually just looked it up. Leafa's full name is Suguha Kirigaya.
I knew that one.
Well,
I didn't know, but those Silica and Lisbeth, I don't know those two.
Yeah, I don't know those ones either. I don't even think I know. To be honest, I didn't even remember their like game names. Even like Silica and Lisbeth, they're like, oh yeah, I think those were characters, weren't they?
Yeah.
Let me.
That was the pink haired girl, and then the little cute girl.
Yeah, Lisbeth is, well, for useful information that's not useful. There's Rika Shinozaki is Lisbeth, and Silica is Keiko Ayano. So, or at least that's what Wikipedia tells. me. Why can't everyone just be like Asuna or Sinon? I mean, technically she's Sinon in the game, and her actual name is Shino Asada, yeah. But close enough, you know? No, I was looking at that, I was just realizing, oh, huh, I thought her real name was Sinon, huh? Well, okay, Shino, well, close enough.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Well, we know that's not Kirito, that's not his real name either, you know?
You're right. Another one I forgot. Well, maybe they just do it for the benefit of the viewers. They, like, are at least somewhat aware it's a show, and they're like, let's just refer to each other by our game name so that the readers, so that the viewers can remember us.
Yeah, they're aware of a fourth wall. Mm. There's not a fifth wall, though. Mm.
Okay. All right, so that was Sword Art Online. Then we've got Fire Force episode 26. So while the previous episode made total sense because it was mostly just kind of a standalone thing, now we're back to the plot that I haven't really been watching before, so all of a sudden I'm confused. So Shinra gets called to this other of the companies to talk to the captain guy, who wants him to burn him or something. But then Shinra's being possessed by some sort of malevolent force that I assume was introduced towards the end of the previous season that makes him go all crazy and attack people. So then Arthur ends up going up against him and fighting him and beating him. And we find out, and now this is a really weird thing. So Arthur's gag has basically been that he's always acting like a knight, and the more he becomes convinced of the fact he's a knight, the stronger he becomes. And then we find out, oh, okay, so the reason for this joke of his is the fact that his parents abandoned him and told him that they were going on a quest to save the kingdom, so at which he took seriously, and that's why, and that tragic, horrible backstory is the reason for a joke that's supposed to be funny? That felt very weird.
Yeah.
But they managed to get Shinra back to normal, and that's basically the episode.
Yeah, not much to say there. I'm not sure how much longer I'm going to stick with it, but because, you know, didn't have to stay up for it this time.
I thought it was okay. I'm still enjoying it more than I remember a bunch of the stuff from the first season, but I don't know. It was just so weird to say, oh, it's a, this funny joke, this kind of goofy joke. Well, it's actually got a super serious tint to it, but I don't know, but we're still going to be treating it as a joke anyway.
By the way, I was looking. Toonami has had, like, almost nothing premiere this entire calendar year. And, I was looking at the Wikipedia thing, and it was like 2020 had hardly anything on it. It was like, it had Paranoia Agent, which really wasn't premiering. And that was, like, one of the four shows. And another one of those was that stupid thing that they just put on. So really, like, two shows they premiered, and one of them is Sword Art Online. So, that's pretty sad.
To be fair, I mean, I suppose you could kind, because they are starting the second season of Fire Force. So, I mean, because I'm noticing they do count Sword Art Online. So they list Sword Art Online, which is a Sword Art Online Alicization - War of Underworld. I'm not sure why that is considered a separate show from Sword Art Online Alicization, but Fire Force, the second season, is not considered a separate show. Because, I mean, this is just a new season of Sword Art Online. Like, it's all, yeah, the, it's all right. The same show.
Yeah, you're right.
So if we're talking absolutely new shows, yeah, that's true. Although, to be fair, a lot of their shows in 2020, I mean, a lot of these are pretty long runners. Like JoJo was kind of long. So a lot of, so that's the reason for a bunch of it.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay. So then we move on to Assassination Classroom episode 11. So we get another transfer student who despite at least appearing human, claims to be Koro Sensei's brother. And there's a lot of goofy gags about that, actually, with everyone wondering about it. But then it turns out he also has tentacles. And they fight, and Koro Sensei is able to win. But what was even his name again? The Itona, I think. That was it. Just as like, well, I'll come back later, and just kind of gets dragged off. He's like, don't worry, yeah, I'll be back to become more important later on.
Oh, is that a hint?
I thought that was kind of a given that he was going to show up again.
Yeah, I figured that too. I was just like, you know, are we hinting towards something coming in the future with this guy? I'm trying to, you know, I don't understand why the show. I look at everything from a reality show standpoint. So in reality shows, you can usually tell who's the heroes and who's the villains. You know, like we can get to that on Amazing Race, but for some reason they seem to be giving a hero's edit to Koro Sensei, even though he blew up half the moon and is ready to destroy Earth. And I keep wondering, why are they giving him a hero's edit? So that's something I've noticed. And you look at it that way from a reality show standpoint, you can figure out that something's going to happen, that Koro Sensei is going to be the good guy somehow because of the way he's been edited. So, unfortunately, I look through everything from a reality TV show standpoint, and that's how I figured that out. And I figured out that those other guys, well, they were given a negative edit, so they're going to be the villains.
You mentioned that, and the funny, weird thing is that Koro Sensei literally after, because he acts so serious and angry during the fight, and afterwards he's like, becomes depressed, and he's saying, I broke character, I'm supposed to be the comic relief. So at least he's self-aware.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so we'll get to Tales of the Abyss continuing on episode 26. We discussed the episode itself fairly thoroughly, but we did want to talk a little about the show itself. One thing I did want to mention about the final episode that I didn't get a chance to mention before was, this is weird. So, I don't know if you remember this, but there's a part where everyone's saying goodbye to Luke. So Jade goes to him and offers his right hand for a handshake, then just stops, retracts his hand, and offers his left one instead. And I was just thinking, what was with that? Because it's framed like it's supposed to be...
You know what? I know what it is. It's because Luke is left-handed. That's why he did that.
Oh, Okay. That makes sense. Perfect.
I looked it up, and that's why he did that, is because Luke's left-handed, and so he purposely is like, I can't shake your right hand, I have to shake your left hand. So that's all that was.
Okay, so All right. Do you have any thoughts you want to share about the series as a whole then?
Yeah, I'm really disappointed because we seem to have not gotten enough character development on most of the supporting characters. And, you know, we got maybe like half an episode on Anis or Anis or whatever her name is. We didn't even really figure out how to pronounce her name because they hardly said her name. She just was kind of there the whole time. And she was just like kind of always there. And she kind of came in out of nowhere and then she never went away. And it was like, okay. And then with Tyr, you know, there that thing in the opening theme song where she like transforms into a totally different looking character, that never came up once in the entire anime. 26 episodes for that to come up, and it didn't happen. So why was it even in the opening? And you know, some of the other characters didn't really get too much. It just seemed kind of like this whole thing about Luke being a replica and all this. I don't know. I just was disappointed that the supporting characters didn't really get a chance to shine, because I thought they, from the way they acted, you know, they seemed like they would have been interesting people to build a show around. I just feel like it was missing something, you know?
Yeah, I did. I mean, the point I always bring up again was the fact it makes a big deal about how Guy's not afraid of women. And I was just thinking, wait, that was a... I know I'm repeating what I've said before, but I was thinking, wait a minute, that was a character trait of his? And once again, apparently that was actually what given much more focus in the games. And with that, I just have to keep wondering, does that mean a lot of other things were given more focus in the game and were just kind of skipped over in the anime, which is like including, you know, focus on Anise or some of the other characters who, you're right, she didn't really get much. She actually, of the main characters, she probably got the least, because the others we got like Jade's backstory, Guy's backstory. We got that stuff with Natalia not being the actual daughter of the king and him deciding, oh, well, I got to kill her now, but then changing his mind. and stuff with like Tyr and stuff. But yeah, Anis was just kind of there.
Yeah, and like, you would think she had a bigger role, given that in the opening theme song, they always showed her like running and hugging Luke, like she was really close to him. And the actual show, she really wasn't that close to him at all. So she just had a crush on him. That's all it really was. And she gave up that crush really easily. So I just really felt like she got the shaft in this thing, and maybe in the game she gets more. I just wonder if the game itself, you know, I don't know, like maybe this is supposed to be like supplementary for people who played the game, but like all the stuff we're seeing here like didn't show up in the, or most of it didn't show up in the game, and it's supposed to like add on to what you've already seen. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen any anime that were based specifically on a video game, like in this before. I mean, in this way, I think there's some that might have been loosely based on one, but yeah, like they were more loosely, but I mean specifically taking a game story, a specific game story, and adapting it like this. So I don't know if this is like ahead of the curve or not. And the other thing is, of course, all the battles that presumably, you know, were big deals in the games are just kind of pretty short in the anime. So, I'm just like wondering if maybe it's just not necessarily, it wasn't something that really could be adapted well into an anime, maybe. I am going to be interested in seeing the anime adaptation for The World Ends With You. I want to see how, because then I can like look and see if that has like some of the same problems. I can say, oh, well, I guess it's just an inherent thing. But if that's better, then I can say, oh, well, they could have done a better job here. Because the two are kind of similar series in terms of being JRPGs. Like, I mean, if you're talking about an adaptation of something like, say, Phoenix Wright, well, I mean, that's already kind of an anime itself. Steins Gate. Steins Gate was based on a video game, although that again was based on a visual novel, which is the sort of thing that I would think would be better suited for anime adaptation. Because it's like the visual novel, basically, obviously you can't, theoretically, all you just got to do is take the stuff and just animate it.
Yeah, see, what I've been watching recently, which we talked about like the last 2 weeks, was this series called Sister Princess with all these sisters who are like madly in love with their older brother. And that was a visual novel first. So whenever they make it into an anime, it feels so much like a game. Like it feels like, okay, here's the in-between parts. And then at the end of the episode, this is like they have one episode per character. So the character gets like their happy ending, and it's like, okay, this must be what the ending would have been if you would have gotten that in the show. So, but visual novels, I think, just are a lot easier to adapt than a JRPG, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to clarify because I'm a little confused about what were you saying, that the series, that the anime actually had multiple endings to display that, or did I misunderstand what you said?
Of the second season, there's 13 episodes, and there's a different, and every 12 of the episodes have a different ending for each character. So it's only you only see the one character in the ending.
Okay. You know? So they basically, they're all alternate endings to each other.
Right.
Okay. I was just thinking, oh yeah, that's what I think I mentioned it, but the manga series We Never Learn, which was kind of like, you know, a harem comedy thing. The author just decided at the end, I'm going to have 5 different endings for this series. for each of the girls, except he didn't actually announce that until he reached the. So the series went on, and then there was a part where the way the chapters were done kind of was different for one, and it's like saying okay, and you can clearly see okay, series is going in this one. The character is going to end up with this. Of the girls, because there are 5 girls that are presented as possible love interests, and so then everyone thought, oh, okay, so that's the one they're going with, and then it reaches the end, you know, conclusion, all this stuff, and then the author says, okay, by the way, there isn't actually a canon ending to this series. I'm going to do 4 more of these. they're of varying quality. The first one was decent. The second one was Well, if you ignore the fact that it focused mostly on secondary character, it was good for them, but then it's kind of like the writer was saying, was thinking, okay, they got to get them together. What can I do? I got to fill 9 chapters with this so it can be a published volume. okay, so, hey, this other character has I'll just focus mostly on her, and then they'll just get the main two will just kind of get together at the end. In that one, the third one, actually, I like the third one because it was kind. It actually backed up earlier into the manga. It like said, okay, this one event, it happened differently, and that resulted in this. And that was kind of cool. The fourth one was actually really good. That was probably my favorite. And now they're in the middle of the fifth one, which, well, it's not done, so I can't really give a verdict on it. So, but yeah, it just reminded me of that. I mean, that's one way to keep your manga going.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's a decent manga, although it does have an annoying. It's if you can get past the fact it does have some annoying amount of fan service, and some of the chapters are kind of like dumb. There's some good stuff to it. It's like you just kind of gotta get past the fact that there's chapters like where the main character ends up stuck in this mascot uniform and can't communicate with other people while he's in the middle of this lingerie store. So all like the girls just think it's some girl in there. Like, hey, can you help me get this stuff on? You just got to get past stuff like that. But there's some good stuff in the series beyond that.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, what were you saying?
Oh, I was just saying, like, I'm surprised, like, visual novels, like, they're, like, non-existent here in America, whereas, like, Japan, they're, like, so big that, like, almost every series has them, you know? I would love to play some of these games that, like, for example, like that, Ayanami Raising Project I told you about.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was only Japanese. Someone did translate it, but they did a really bad job at translating. Like, they didn't know how to spell English words. Like, they got the Japanese words right. They just didn't get the English words right. And it just was not very good, but I would love to play some of these games, and unfortunately there's no way of playing them because they haven't been translated and they're so old they never will be, you know.
Yeah. So. I mean, I guess there's the option of learning Japanese, but I tried. It's a hard language.
Uh-huh.
Right now, I'm just trying to get my Spanish better, which is difficult because I'm trying to actually listen to it and understand it. And the problem is, I can listen to something like. So I've been trying to. I mentioned this before, but I've been trying to watch some stuff in Spanish. The problem is, the more basic stuff is boring. So I was just like saying, okay, hey, I like this video game. I'll watch a Spanish guy on YouTube playing through it, and then he says something. I'm like, I can't figure out what he says, and his grammar seemed wrong because he left out a word that I know you had to be there. So I dragged my sister over to listen to it and tell me what he said. And first of all, he actually did say the word. I just didn't hear it because he said it so quickly. So which shows how bad my listening comprehension is. But then she was able to tell me, okay, he said this thing there. And I'm like, oh, wow, I could not have told that. So that's harder. On the plus side, the advantage of a novel is you don't have to, like, worry about listening. You just have to read it. I can read Spanish. I've been playing through this this game. I think I've always told this, but I'm playing through this game called Ghost Trick, which has a Spanish option. And it's very heavy in text, but I'm able to... I've been able to understand it, even if I have to look up a lot of the words. But that it's harder with Japanese because you have to memorize all those different symbols.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. Getting back to the original thing before I went on my tangent that just was me repeating something I'm sure I've said before. The problem with the visual novels, I think, is there's a lot of text in those things. And that takes time to translate. So yeah. If they're going to devote that amount of time to it, it has to be something that they think is going to sell pretty well. I mean, Ace Attorney is popular, and there's a few of the games they didn't translate into English because they just said, well, we don't think we're going to be able to sell enough of these things to make all the localization worth it. And if they're going to do that for a series like that, which is reasonably popular, like, you know, not a smash hit or anything, but reasonably popular, then for something like the Rei Ayanami Rising Project, definitely not.
Yeah, I could never get a different ending than the fast food ending, mm-hmm. which I think is supposed to be like a bad ending. Like, you were only able to get Rei Ayanami into a fast food job in life. You were that bad of a parent. So, so yeah.
Okay. All right. So, okay. So now that we were talking about Tales of the Abyss.
Yeah, we were.
Reminds me of when I was listening to this podcast, and they were talking about like annoying ads in sports games, and then it was one of those things where that conversation drifted to something else, which then drifted to something else, which drifted to something else, and they ended up talking about eugenics. And then one of them saying, so anyway, the point is, don't put ads like that in your games. And then one of them said, wait, how did we get to this topic from that? So, yeah, that was, anyway, back to this stuff. We did not watch Ghost in the Shell this week. We had some problems there, but we'll be back next week, we think. In the meantime, we have Yashahime Episode 7.
Okay, so basically, Setsuna and Muraha go off on their own. And Towa goes off on her own. She gets captured, and then she gets rescued by the other two. And it kind of, I think we saw this scene in the first episode, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, we did.
Or maybe, yeah. And so we're finally getting to that point. And we still are at the point where we don't know anything about the original characters, and people are starting to get antsy about that. And, there's also some bad news, which is that today, Moroku's voice actor died. So,
English or Japanese?
English.
Okay.
So, he died today or maybe yesterday. But his Japanese voice actor also died earlier. So, So, this episode, I thought it was pretty good, but there's really not much to say about it.
Yeah, well, honestly, until the point where she got captured and I realized it was saying, okay, this is episode one, I was thinking, oh man, this is going to be another sort of filler episode like the last one, but they did at least tie it back in with the first episode, and I'm hoping that that's a sign that after this they're going to start focusing more on things, because I mean, everyone is just one, like, the obvious questions: what happens to the main characters? This isn't like, you know, so when you jump forward in like something like Star Trek to Next Generation, you can't just say, well, it's like 100 years later, they're all presumably most of them are presumably dead, or they're really old, but or they just went into other things or something like that. But when we're this close, I mean, especially when we're talking about the kids of the characters.
Yeah.
We need like a little more of an explanation. It feels like we're 7 episodes in. They really need to do something about that soon.
Yeah.
Okay. So, finally, we have Attack on Titan, episode 58. So we finish up with Eren's father's flashback, where that guy who turned into the Titan, and he gets rid of the other people there, and so it's just the two of them, and he explains like what he needs Eren's father to do, which is, okay, you'll turn into a Titan, then you'll eat me, and you'll gain my powers and stuff, and now you need to go in to that will let you get past all the wild Titans, then you can go there and do things, and try to restore stuff or whatever. My question is how he was so familiar with the political situation inside the walls. How did he know that?
Yeah.
I
don't know.
That was my question. But, okay. Also, in something, in a reveal that worked better in Japanese, I think, he reveals that the name of their Titan is the Attack Titan, which is a reference to the title of the series, but the problem is that it's, well, first, they decided to name it Attack on Titan, not Attack Titan in English. So, I wouldn't have even known that that was, like, literally the title of the series. It's the same as a Japanese title, if not for me, like, seeing someone mention that online.
Oh, is it?
It's, okay, so the name of it in Japanese is called Shingeki no Kyojin, which means, there's several possible ways to interpret it. The way most people interpreted it was just to mean, okay, it's attacking giants. You know, it's saying it's that the Titans are attacking people. That's what it's a reference to, attacking Titans. So here he's saying it's a Titan. It's the Shingeki no Kyojin, Attack Titan. So then it's saying, oh, no, it actually wasn't attacking Titans. It was Attack Titan. And that's sort of an ambiguity that you can't really do in English. So I guess knowing the author, I think, was the one who wanted the name Attack on Titan. So I guess he just said, well, you can't do it in English. Let's just call it Attack on Titan.
Okay. Well, that explains a lot of things. What I don't understand is, like, going back to a reality TV thing, like, for the entire series, Eren's father was, like, given the edit of being this really, just despicable guy, pretty much. And now in these flashback episodes, he's, like, shown to be this, like, completely innocent man who all he was trying to do was just have a family, and he got tortured to death and all this stuff, was tortured. And it's like, what? This isn't the same guy. It's like, I don't know why they built him up as like such this evil person. And now we find out, oh, he wasn't that bad at all. Like, that doesn't really make sense to me.
Was he really built up as an evil person?
That's what I got. That's what I thought for all this time, was that he was the mastermind behind all this Titans and stuff. And he caught, his wife to die and all that. And I don't know, that's what I came away with it from. So
I don't think so. Well, he did take the step, the one where he basically, where in order to gain the power of the founding Titan from the royal family, he, ate, one of them to get that, and then he killed all the rest, even like the kids that were there. So that was definitely a very morally gray action at best. But other than that, I don't remember him ever really being indicated to have been a bad guy.
Okay, maybe it was just my Yeah, just the way I interpreted it.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough, because it didn't really say that much, so I can like see how you could remember and just kind of assume that was what he was doing. But yeah, he was definitely even then at least a morally gray character, but I don't think he was really indicated to actually be a major villain.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so they all get So the flashback's over. We find everyone kind of reacts to the news and stuff. There's some weird comedy involving Aaron just spouting out random stuff and people just saying, oh, he's just going through a phase.
I didn't understand that. Could you explain that to me? Why, what that was about?
Well, okay, so he does it twice. The first time when he just announces the Attack Titan, it's called the Attack Titan. That was because he was seeing his father's memories, so he was that was just what was prompting him to say that out loud. I think, which did like get the kind of funny reaction where someone said, "Well, what? Why did you just say that?" You know how, like, on TV, a lot of times you'll have a character who will, you know, have, like, they'll, like, you'll see them do a flashback or whatever, and then they'll say something, and then you just never, and, but there's no implication they actually told anyone what they were thinking about, so in-universe, it would just be them, like, giving a random, line or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that was a running gag on Scrubs where, JD would always just have some weird imagination about something and then just make some comment based on it that wouldn't make any sense to anyone because he didn't see that imagination bit. There's even an episode where you see it from the point of view of this other character, and JD just kind of stops and stares off into space, and the character is thinking, oh man, he's just staring off into space. He's going to come back with some random line that doesn't make any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So that was what was going on with that first one. The second one was when he just comes to the realization. He remembers, he works out that, remember at the end of season 2 where all the Titans just suddenly seem to be under Aaron's control? It's explained here that it's because he came in contact with a Titan that his father's former wife turned into, and she's of royal blood, so touching her put him in power with the coordinate because he had the founding Titan in it that took control of all the Titans, which was when he realizes that convoluted thing I just said. That's when he stands up and goes, would it be? And everyone's like, what are you talking about? You just stood up all of a sudden. He goes, never mind. So it's just, oh, he's just going through a phase. Okay, so that was our Attack on Titan. We did 5 shows. So we can just give a quick top 3 before we start talking about our not anime stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Number 1 for me would be.
Oh wait, actually, Yasuhime, wait. I'm sorry to interrupt. I just realized we Actually, we should, the 6, we could count Tales of the Abyss because we didn't do our ranking last week. But now I suddenly, I don't know. Tales of the Abyss wouldn't be in my top 3 anyway for its final episode, so.
Yeah, Yasuhime, number 1. Number 2, Attack on Titan. And number 3, Assassination Classroom. Yeah, that was kind of a funny episode. Yeah, so those are mine.
Yeah, for me, for 3rd, I think, if I'm trying to count this week and last week, actually, I think I would put in Fire Force, and then Assassination Classroom, and then Attack on Titan. I think these last 2 episodes of Attack on Titan are ones that I think one would enjoy more if you had been paying really strong attention through more of the series. But to be fair, that's part of the series' fault for being kind of boring at points.
Well, yeah, it just took so long to get to this point, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, whenever, like, a lot of the things remind me of Death Note, you know, if you touch the paper or, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's like, okay, I get it, but it's taken 50-some episodes to get to this point. Like, by now, I'm kind of like burnt out, you know, like in Death Note, you learn those things right off the bat. And here it's like, okay, 57 episodes from now, we'll finally explain what happened in the first episode. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's a little too long to wait. So yeah, if all this exciting stuff would have happened in season one, I probably would have loved the show. I probably never would have gotten down on it and called it all these awful things. But it's just taken way too long to become, you know, exciting. And, you know, now we have to wait until season four to wrap things up.
Yeah, I don't know when they'll be putting that on Toonami. It starts up in Japan in just a few weeks, but Toonami was usually on about a month behind it in the previous seasons, but with dubbing stuff being slower than normal, we have no idea. It could be a bit of a wait before they put it on Toonami, which I assume they're going to. Okay. All right, so that has been Toonami Therapy, the actual Toonami/anime portions of it. You can find our episodes on toonamitherapy.podbean.com. And with that said, wow, we talked for a while, despite my statement that we should be going fast, although some of the tangents were my own fault. I guess we can just talk about the Amazing Race if we want. So we had episodes 6 and 7 of them, because we didn't cover 6 last time.
No, we had 3 episodes.
Oh yeah, because they had a double. Six to eight. They aired 2 episodes yesterday.
Yeah. So basically, my pick got eliminated. So I don't really have a rooting interest the rest of the way, but I guess maybe I am. I due to the way it's edited, I'm starting to catch on now with editing stuff. I was able to figure out both times who was going home, and my guess from the edit is that Hung and Chi are going to win this season, just from their edit. That's my guess. I mean, you know, the NFL players will not win. They just wouldn't let that happen. And, you know, those blondes aren't going to win because they suck. And, Will and James, they come off as too arrogant. I think they don't have a good edit. They have like a edit that kind of says that they're going to end up going down, and then whoever's left just hasn't had enough. Maybe the volleyball players have a chance. They've had a pretty positive edit. The brother sister one, they hardly appear on the screen, so you know they're not going to win. So that's my handicaps. If I were just to pick, I pick number one would be Hung and Chi, number two would be the volleyball guys, and number three would be Will and James. So that's my handicaps for the rest of the season.
Let's see. So the other, you're better at predicting these sort of things than me. Mostly it's all I can do is just to look at what they're when they're doing the talking to the camera thing, a lot of which, of course, is after the leg. You can just kind of look at that and try to see what their expressions and stuff to get a good look at, like, okay, this team managed to make it through. is usually how you can tell that sort of thing. Here was an issue I had with one of the challenges, though. That was the one where they have to go through the sort of quote unquote like movie filming thing where, you know, they go through the stuff with like, you know, pretending to fight the guy with the like fake spear and all that kind of stuff. And then at the end, they're given questions about like how many spears were there, how many horsemen were there and stuff. But from what I could tell, my understanding of it was they didn't know the questions ahead of time. So they went through it, they got quizzed, and then everyone got it wrong because no one knew they were supposed to be counting that stuff. And then went through it again, paid attention this time, and then tried. So what was even the point? Why not just ask them the questions? Why not tell them the questions at the start and can go through the first one and try? Since no one's going to win their first attempt, you might as well just cut it out, essentially. Let them know the questions, have them go through it, and then you know, some people will manage to keep track of it and get it right, and some people will get it wrong something like 8 times because they were counting things as spears that weren't actually spears.
Wouldn't it have been funny if they had asked different questions the second time? They asked totally different questions. It's like, oh, crap. I was counting this. But those poor actors, they had to act that out over and over and over again. I mean, come on. That was... like, it took them, like, what, 10 attempts to get it? Like, they, man, it was so funny because we saw them at the end and, like, all the actors are cheering at the end. And it was like they're cheering because they don't have to do it anymore.
Yeah. One thing I wish I could have, what I was wondering was about, so they finally used the yield and, I mean, you know, everyone is going to be using them in the next leg because it's supposed to be the last one they can use it. So we're like, well, might as well. But and I was just left wondering, because the team that got yielded then was eliminated. And I was just wondering, did that yield actually make a difference? Because we don't know how much time elapsed between them and the team that got there ahead of time. I was just very curious as to whether they were so far behind the yield ended up not making a difference at all, or whether it would have, it actually shifted things.
Yeah, that's, of course, it can always make a psychological difference, you know, like if you feel like you're coming from behind, you might, you feel like you're way behind, then you end up rushing and making more mistakes, you know. So you couldn't just calculate 20 minutes and say, okay, yeah, did it, you know, it does more than just the 20 minutes. But I do agree that you'd like to see how quick that, you know, like how, what the difference was. Mm-hmm. But they would never show that because they need to have some sort of suspense and, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm talking about after the fact. Once we know everyone has been like checked in and stuff, and there's no need for a suspense. They can then tell that I would have liked to have known what time they got checked in, because at that point there's no need for suspense. You can just tell me, I can go, oh, okay, the yield changed it, or it didn't change it, as the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember the even worse, when you go, if I remember correctly, the times they start in the morning, like they get like a 12-hour respite, so they leave 12 hours after they got there. So what I was wondering about then, so I was thinking you could look at the times, but because they got eliminated, you can't see what their time was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. I'm thinking that maybe I should like be compiling a list of stuff you absolutely need to know or be willing to do before going on the Amazing Race. Like, number one, get over your fear of heights. Number two, know how to drive a stick shift. I think, because yeah. I remember them having trouble with that in previous seasons too.
Though, I've always thought about getting on Survivor and the physical condition you'd have to be in, just ridiculous. You know, you have to be really athletic to make it on that show.
Okay. Let's see. Is there anything else? But yeah, what you were mentioning about about the fact that the people on the film would have to keep doing all that stuff. It just made me wonder, what do they tell the people at these challenges? Like, there's that one where there's like the costume party where people are dressed up as people from the paintings and stuff. And I'm just like wondering how do they contact those people? Do they just go, "Hey, you're having a party. We're doing this thing with the race." I just wonder what they're told about that and how they kind of deal with the fact that in that case, you know, they would have to, put up with someone grabbing them and then being the wrong person and stuff.
I have an idea. They say, "Here's a bunch of money. Now do this for us." That's how they do it.
Yeah, I assume. But I was just wondering, like, whether they, like, were taking advantage of something that was already there or if they were just getting people and asking them to do it. I did think it was kind of funny when the person could not unscramble the stuff. And, you know, that was something I was wondering about. Because when they were hoisting down and they saw the letters and they had to remember them and unscramble them to form sauerkraut, I was just wondering, were you not permitted to write them down or something, even afterwards, that you could, like, write it down to better visualize it? Maybe you just couldn't, but it seems like that would have been a way to try to do it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's The Amazing Race. All right, so now we're going to talk about what thing we've been planning to do for a little while, but now we're doing it, going through Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yep.
So you are watching it on the Blu-ray, right?
Right, yeah.
Okay, I'm watching it on the DVD. It's my understanding that they changed, I don't know if they did this for more episodes. I know in the first episode they updated some of the special effects for the Blu-ray. So you would have seen a slightly different episode than I did.
Okay.
But I think it was just like special effects and stuff like that. So, before we talk about it, I wanted to know, going into this, how much have you seen of Star Trek: The Next Generation, or even Star Trek in general?
I've seen, you know, bits and pieces, like episode here, episode there. So I would say, like, overall, I've probably seen, like, I've never seen a full season, but, like, if you added up all of the episodes I've watched, it would probably come out to be like a season. Like, I never watched this one before, so.
Okay, when you say that, are you talking about all the Star Trek series in general or just Next Generation?
Well, that both, because I really haven't seen any of the other Star Treks.
Okay.
So yeah.
Okay.
I'm not familiar at all with the other ones. Just the only thing I know about Deep Space Nine is that O'Brien must suffer. That's all I know.
Yeah, he's in this episode too, actually.
Yeah.
I was surprised to see that I knew he was I of course knew he was in Next Generation because I've seen most of the episodes of this series. Not all of them, but most. And I saw him, and I'm like, oh, he was there in the pilot. Wow. And he is credited in the credits as Battle Bridge Com. he wasn't even given a name yet. Yeah, okay. So yeah, like I've seen I've seen almost all the episodes, really. There's a few that I haven't seen, but most of the ones I did watch were from, I watched quite a while ago. Like this, when I was much younger, this must have been like, I think I was in my teens. This would have been quite a while ago. This might have been 2 decades ago for all I know. Oh, wow, that saying that makes me feel old. But but I had, like, watched pretty much all of the original series, not even remotely in order. I just got all the videos from the library, and I like, put... So at the library, you can put holds at stuff and come to pick them up. So I just put holds on, like, all... Because they didn't even have DVD... No, I think they had DVDs, but they... it was mostly just the tapes there. So I just got all the tapes, and each tape, remember, had 2 episodes on it. So they all came in, and I had to use a bag to carry out, like, all the tapes I had gotten. My mother was annoyed. She was like, what? So I did that, and then I went into Next Generation, which, despite everyone saying the first season was bad, I don't remember disliking it when I originally watched it, but it's possible that my opinion is going to be changing a bit now that I'm older and have seen more. But so yeah, okay, so this is Encounter at Farpoint, the first episode. It's a 2-hour episode, but it's considered to be, unlike other two-parters, it's just like one episode. There isn't really a... They split it up when they air in syndication, and you'll notice that they, when they put in the to be continued, is at a really random point because they had to put it somewhere.
Yeah.
Like, the point where they put it, I don't think is... I'm not even sure if it was an actual commercial break. Okay, so, I don't know, how do you want to, go through this, episode? For anyone listening, I guess I'll just give a very quick synopsis. So they come to the main characters come to the Enterprise on its first voyage. They come across this guy named, Q, who tells them humanity's on trial, and that, their mission is going to be, like, sort of a judgment for them. So then they go on and they manage to figure out that the station is actually this, this giant alien, being that the guys captured, which is why it's like this other big alien, thing, which they initially thought was a ship, but was so big, comes, in to, like, attack them for it. So they manage to get everything resolved. You know, it comes out, they're reunited, everything's great. Q decides, well, I guess you pass. And yeah, I went through it fast. I just wanted to get the bear stuff out of the way.
Yeah, my question. If humanity is on trial, then why are a bunch of humans scoffing over the trial that humanity is on? Like, I didn't understand that at all. It's like, aren't those people humans? Like, shouldn't they be worried?
I think, oh, you mean the ones where they were, when they were in the sort of pseudo courtroom that was like a recreation, yeah, of something? Yeah, I don't think those were like, those were like real, like, humans. They were just they were just like creations Q made to sort of mimic the way humans were acting at this, like, point in the Star Trek fictional history.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's a good point, though. Well, before we get into the plot, there is one thing I wanted to mention, and that's the Next Generation has a really good theme song.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird because, so I was like, this is really good. I should go back and check the other series out. I don't even really remember what Voyager and DS9s were. What were they like? So I listened to them, like, oh, there's a reason I don't remember. They're super forgettable. Like, the only real Star Trek openings, at least of the first 5 series, I haven't really seen, like, the later ones, were, like, the original series and the Next Generation. The rest are all just not Voyager and DS9 are just kind of like full orchestration and not really great ones. And they're also, these are long theme songs. This thing is 1 minute, 45 seconds about.
Well, you do realize that it's the theme of the first movie, you know,
mm-hmm.
Star Trek, the picture. That's what Star Trek The Next Generation theme song is. It's the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that. You're right. It is. So, but yeah, it's a good one. It's like, you know, you have that cool opening. You have Picard give his monologue, which is the same as the original series, except five-year mission is changed to continuing mission, and they swap where no man has gone before to where no one has gone before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So I guess we can, here's the first thing to talk about. So originally this was going to be just an hour episode. It was really just, they go to the station, they, all that stuff happens, they figure things out, and then every thing solved, and that's the end. And they, and the network said, no, this needs to be 2 hours. And so they were like, okay, what can we, so they basically introduced Q. That whole plot was there to try to make this 2 hours. Which is a good thing, because it's the best part of this episode by a significant margin. The, like, main plot of this episode is pretty boring, actually.
Yeah, it is. And the Q is really what makes it good. And Card always going, get off my bridge and get off my ship. he was always mean to Q. So.
Yeah. And here's something actually surprising. There is not a, I don't think there was a single finger snap from Q in this entire episode. That's like his trademark, practically. And he doesn't do it in this episode, which suddenly makes me wonder, when did he start doing that? As a sort of trademark way of manipulating reality.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Q, it was good because, well, he was fun. The stuff with him was more interesting. I mean, it wasn't amazing, but it was a lot better. And it made the main plot better, because by saying, okay, they're doing this stuff because it's part of some test there they have to do, that like makes it feel more monumental than, why are these random things appearing out of nowhere on this station?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The introduction to Riker was a little weird. It was just kind of like, okay, we're going to go pick him up and he's going to become the second in command. That was a little weird. I did like, though, that they introduced the characters pretty well, because I'm thinking, oh, I already know this. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is how everyone was introduced to these different things about the characters. So they had to be introduced somewhere. So that was pretty interesting to see. So
we keep interrupting each other.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I was saying, yeah, they did like introduce a lot of the important stuff of each character. I feel for some of them, it didn't necessarily do a great job. Like, when you look at it, like, Tasha Yar and Worf, like, what do they really do in this episode other than just kind of doing some kind of dumb stuff?
Yeah.
Like, pretty much every bit of advice Worf gives in this episode, or, like, does, is wrong.
Isn't there, like, a video on YouTube about that? Like, there's, like, a whole video that's like 15 minutes long of like all the times Worf gets rejected or something.
Yeah, I think I heard of that video, but I haven't seen it. I'm looking. Yeah. Oh yeah, I see it. Worf gets denied again and again on Star Trek TNG. I haven't seen this. Maybe I should. But yeah, I know that. But he was like especially bad in this episode. Like he even like points the phaser at Q, who's appearing in the monitor. Picard says, that would just blast through the monitor. Why are you doing that? Yeah. And like I said, Tasha Yar also kind of gets it bad. She mostly just kind of stands there dumbly and then it occasionally just gets this really big bit of overacting. I noticed her uniform like very much accentuates her chest. I noticed in this episode that's not the sort of thing I think I normally notice, but I was like, oh wow, they really like made it tight for her this episode.
Yeah, it's eventually it's not until the Troy also has like a uniform that kind of shows off some stuff too.
Yeah.
But
how it's kind of like
hers becomes even more revealing as the show goes on, and it's not until Picard sees four lights that they finally give her a normal normal uniform.
Yeah, that was something else I wanted to mention, because in this one she's wearing sort of like, it's sort of like a dress. It's like, it's something in the vein of the like dresses like the women wore in the original series, and I'm like, oh, that's okay. I'm a little confused why she's the only one doing it outside of a few background cast members, including for some reason a few guys. After this episode, that gets swapped out, and she just starts wearing random clothing instead of, you know, an actual uniform for some reason. And I was thinking, I don't know, I think she actually, at least here, it's something that looks like a uniform. But yeah, that also, speaking of Troy, there's this weird part where she communicates telepathically to Riker, an ability I don't think she ever uses or is referred to in any other episode.
Yeah, I was curious about that. I was like, wait a minute, I didn't know she could do that. that was really weird. I felt like we were watching Ghost in the Cell there. That's what I thought I was watching.
Let's see. Other things. So I guess we can go through some of the other characters. So we've already kind of covered Picard, Riker. Dr. Crusher's here, although she doesn't really do too much. Most of her scene is with Wesley, who's, you know, kind of a notorious character.
Yeah, he's going to become annoying this first season, isn't he?
Yeah, he's considered, they tone him down a bit eventually, but, So we mentioned that. Data actually might come, outside of this, the weird bit at the start where they try to play for comedy, the fact he doesn't know what the word Snoop means. Outside of that, he comes across as pretty well in this episode. You know, it establishes he's an android, he's strong and smart, but he also really wants to be human.
Mm-hmm.
Here's something you might not
go ahead.
I'm sorry, I keep interrupting. We keep interrupting.
No, I didn't have anything good to say. I just was Yeah, you can go ahead.
Let's see. We covered Troy. There's also LaForge, who, he wears a visor, and that's basically what we know about him in this episode.
Yeah, that was what I was going to say. I was like, okay, we find out that he wears a visor, and that is absolutely it. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, it's not really, from what I remember, until season 2 where they kind of figure out what to do with his character, because he's not chief engineer yet. That happens at the start of season two.
Mm-hmm.
Although a fun fact is it mentions that when he wears a visor, it causes him pain. And interestingly enough, the having to wear that actually caused headaches for the actor.
Really?
Yes.
All I knew is that they like kind of changed him. His like they made it different. I don't even remember how they made it different, but it was like for Star Trek First Contact, they were like, well, we want people to see his eyes, so we're going to get rid of the visor. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess some other interesting things. I mentioned how they used Q to, like, kind of pad it out, which was good. Definitely good. Made it a lot better. But to also to pad it out, they also had to include stuff like that. When you look back at it, pretty pointless saucer separation sequence. Which they spend a bunch of time separating and then putting them back together. Why? Because it fills space.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like a big thing in this episode. Like, I guess they needed to show off that the Enterprise could do that. So they, and then we had to find out that Riker's a good pilot, that he was able to connect it back up again. So I guess that was a tiny bit of character development there, but,
okay. Now, there's that part where Data meets with that Admiral. Now, did you know who he was?
Not until, yesterday, not until I looked it up yesterday, I was like, is that Gene Roddenberry? I couldn't figure out who it was. I was like, it had to be someone, and then I was like, oh, I should have known that. So yeah, I found out who he was, but yeah.
Yeah. It's weird that it doesn't tell you that it was, like, they don't, all they would have had to do was refer to him as Admiral McCoy, and that would have explained
right.
It. Because, I mean, I knew that, and I'm looking at him like, wow, he looks different than I remember from the show. It's not like, he's a lot older, so he doesn't, it's not as, he's not as recognizable as he was. Like, I knew he was, and I'm looking at him like, I don't know if I would have recognized who he was if not for knowing it ahead of time.
Yeah.
If Data had just referred to him as Admiral McCoy, then problem solved. Also, it has been a long time since I've seen any of the original series. I do not remember McCoy being anywhere near as Southern as he was here. Like, because he, like, refers to Data as boy multiple times. He even, like, says, you hear? I don't remember that from the original series at all.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah.
It
was nice he got put in there briefly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that was... It's just, I didn't know who... Because I was thinking, okay, so... Because I didn't know that. I was thinking, oh, maybe this is like Gene Roddenberry, like making it a Stan Lee type of thing. I didn't know.
So I mentioned how they upped the sort of special effects for the Blu-ray. How do they look? I'm wondering. On the DVD, they were just, I looked at them like, they're passable. They're not like bad, but they're just, you know, kind of passable.
Well, the special effects I saw seemed pretty good. So obviously they must have spruced them up, because I never noticed the time when I was like, oh, that isn't, I mean, they aren't, you know, like Star Wars, that's for sure. But and there was never a time I was like, okay, that's really bad. Okay. So I think they did do something to spruce them up. So
okay, yeah, I will say that even if the special effects were kind of basic, like the sets themselves actually still look pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
Although unfortunately, there's a part where Wesley is on the bridge and it's kind of like, you know, panning around to like to show the different parts of it. And I was just thinking, this is supposed to make everything look great, but I think it actually makes it look more primitive because it's suddenly making me realize, oh wow, there really isn't that much stuff on this set, is there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Now I remember what you're talking about. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, they like sewed the whole set and it's like, it really isn't all that great. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it looks technologically it looks okay enough. I mean, it's aged so much better than the set of the original series.
Yeah.
But doing that caused me to notice something I hadn't before, which is how bare it was, at least in this episode, whereas I hadn't really noticed that before. So unfortunately, the thing that's supposed to show how amazing everything was just kind of actually backfired a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, yeah. Also, the Enterprise model, that actually still looks good today. Like when it's, you see it in space, and I'm like, oh yeah, that actually still looks good.
Yeah, it does look good. Yeah, that's definitely a like that thing where they got the saucer back on. Like that was pretty good graphics. So.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to mention?
I had this idea. Here's my idea for Star Trek is to rate the episode on a 1 to 10 scale. So, you know, 10 being perfect and 1 being horrible. So what would you give this on a 1 to 10 scale?
Oh, that's a really hard one. I'd like to almost, man, I wish I could do it. Like there's this guy who does a bunch of Star Trek reviews called SF Debris. And he like always does on a 1 to 10, but for each Star Trek series, he kind of grades it on a curve for its own series. I need to rewatch all of this to try to figure out what's average for this. So, Encounter at Farpoint. That put me on the spot. I'm not really sure. I think I will probably give it a. There's some pretty good stuff here, but a bunch of it, especially the second half, is kind of boring. So I think I will just give it a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a 7. So, I'll give it a 7 mainly because of Q. And, like, pretty much every episode I've ever seen with Q has been good. So, this is probably the worst one I've seen that has had Q in it. I've not seen all the Qs. I haven't seen all the Qs, just some of them.
Did you see Hide in Q, the one where Riker gains, like, powers of a Q?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay, one yet. That's normally considered the weakest Q episode, at least in Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen that one. So, but there are some really good ones with Q.
Yeah.
So I mean, good ones. Some of the best of the series. So.
Oh yeah, I can think of There's like 3 Q episodes that jump out right away as considered some of the best ones. Those would be, I assume, there's the one where there's like the finale. There's that one where Picard kind of relives an earlier portion of his life. And then there's there's that one with the Borg. Those are like the 3, like the really best ones those are the ones that people usually kind of hold up as like some of the best episodes of the series. Actually, mm-hmm. the Borg one is usually not held, that specific episode held up not so much as like one of the best episodes of the series, but like one, like the point where the series really started, you know, kind of more finding its footing and stuff. But it's held up as good, but you know, not in the league with of like the finale or Tapestry.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I think that's about it. I don't really have anything else to add.
The only other thing I guess I would mention, totally random, but the red shirt who gets frozen at the start, they refer to as Torres, and I was like, oh hey, one of the main characters on Voyager had the last name of Torres. I mean, she's a totally different character, but there's that. And you know, I wonder, was that like almost meant as a joke? Because everyone always makes the jokes about the red shirts dying in the original series. It makes me wonder if they made the uniform colors, like they said, okay, well, we all know it's a joke, so red is command, so Picard and Riker are going to be red shirts now. That's our sign that, no, it's not just going to be red shirts dying all the time.
Yeah, I've actually thought the same thing. I'm like, because I was like, I grew up with just the Next Generation, so I never understood the whole red shirt joke until later on, you know?
Yeah, so like in the original series, and I never realized this is what the colors meant until they actually made a brief reference to it in Deep Space Nine in this episode where they travel back in time and end up during the events of the Tribbles episode of the original series. It's actually a great episode. Well, both the original and the DS9 one are good. They like sort of were able to digitally insert them into the episode. It was kind of cool, but
mm-hmm.
But so like in the original ones, like green was like command. So you know, you had Kirk. Blue was science or medicine and medical, and then red was mostly engineering stuff. And it was like the engineering people who were so constantly killed, like. When I watched the original series, I don't think I had even heard of the red shirt joke. And I started watching it and was realizing, wow, wearing red tends to kill you off, doesn't it? whereas in this one, they swapped it out. So now gold is engineering. Red is, I guess, command or also battle systems or something, whatever that was. Is because Geordi's wearing that. And I guess because he's helping pilot stuff or whatever. So... I don't know. I still am not 100% sure about that, but it is interesting that they put the two main characters in red now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So that was our first step. So that's us covering the first episode of The Next Generation. We'll be covering more in the future, it seems. I don't know if we'll be babbling on quite as much about each, because they're going to be shorter. But yes, we'll be getting going. It'll be interesting to see what I end up thinking about these episodes when I rewatch them. Because, like I said, everyone always says the first season was pretty bad, and I didn't remember having that negative a reaction to it originally. But things might change. I did look at like the list of I was kind of glancing through them and thinking of, okay, this is the one people really dislike. It did look like the sort of bad episodes were more front loaded in the season. So I guess that means once you get past them, things are a bit better, but it also means you got to get through them at the start. So I guess we'll see.
Yep.
Maybe upon watching them, I'll be like, yeah, it wasn't the greatest, but it wasn't as bad as people made it sound. At least there's no clip show in season one. They did that in season two, though.
Oh, they did. I didn't even know that.
Oh, well, I guess I kind of spoiled that. When I first watched that episode, I didn't know it was a clip show going in. So I'm just like, oh, this seems kind of interesting. So this stuff is happening with Car. Oh, wow. They're sure showing a lot of clips. And oh, wow, that's a lot of clips. This is a clip show, isn't it? Okay. So.
Okay. What?
That's going to be it for Next Generation and for our podcast for now. So we'll see you next week.
Bye.